This is a production of Cornell University.
So, I don't know. Do you want to speak on it now? What the additional?
I didn't hear Ellen's questions. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Terry. I just asked if there was going to be a follow-up email with that link to the priority school again, or if that was the only communication.
I didn't plan on sending a follow-up email reminder, although, I mean, that's an idea. We do have an email that we usually send out a couple weeks in advance of the president's address that sort of frames more like an invitation to the event. We don't normally put in other content, newsy content or anything else, but, I mean, we could... I guess I'll think about that. The one thing that I'm working on right now is a one-page flyer that advertises the poll that we could put up in places around campus. I was sort of thinking targeting like the time clock areas wherever we're allowed to post that kind of thing. But Brandon had the idea a couple weeks ago. When we were talking about the tobacco-free campus thing for doing a QR code. So that one pager will have sort of the prompt, a QR code, and a short bit.ly URL so that people will see it that way and can just do it on their phone or whatever. It's just a sort of different way of advertising it. So I am planning to do that, and the survey will be open through the rest of the month so that we can have a chance to get other responses in the next couple of weeks. And then in the October newsletter, which will come out after the president's address, that way we'll have some photos, we'll have some news coverage to point to. We'll, depending on timing-wise, put some basic survey results, a sort of summary result, simple type of thing in that newsletter. So that was the plan. Anything else on that, I guess? Did you want me to go into my committee stuff at this point, or I don't know where we are in that order.
So now we are moving on to committee reports, and you're the first up.
Oh, well, that's perfect. Sorry. You know what? I could turn on my video so you guys can. Can you see me? Hi. Let's see. So I guess related to the poll, so the email that went out last week, that was our first newsletter of the year. It went out to 14,218 people. Which surprised me a little bit because it's more than I expected, but that comes from the bulk mail people. They do the mailing distribution list for different audiences, and Gina tells me that includes temp. I lost the note, but it includes a bunch of sort of subgroups, also potentially New York City and Geneva. So that explains the larger number. The email was open, had 4,358 unique opens, which is a 31% open rate. So that's pretty good. Something to build on anyway. And almost 800 click-throughs. So I feel pretty good about the engagement. And as Hey mentioned, we got hopefully we'll get about 500 responses when we top out for the survey. So I'm pretty happy with that. The intent is to do that monthly. And so closer to the next one, I'll be sending out a call for content if you guys have content suggestions. Chris had made a suggestion for the last one, which was the expanding TCAT access. And so try to get everybody's ideas heard. Let's see. So high priority stuff. Just to expand a little bit on the president's address, I've mentioned, I can't remember if I've mentioned in this large group already, it will be live streamed and live captioned for accessibility in case anybody is wondering. The live stream will be available on Cornellcast, and people can go there to submit questions in advance for the Q&A. No lunch will be provided this year due to timing, but Marcy is working on a quote for some light refreshments instead for afterwards, like apples, cookies, that kind of thing. So we're working on that. We will be, let's see, as Tehe mentioned, Ellen will be sending out the call for volunteers. That's really important. We're going to be working on some signage to help direct people where they need to go. But the volunteers, you guys will be just super important. No sign can do it better. So we'll just try to have as many greeters as possible and funnel people the right way. We are working on a slideshow for the event. We have just received approval for digital signage ad that will go up to promote the event. And as I mentioned, there will be an email invitation to all staff to advertise as well. We will be having a pre-write in the Chronicle, and Adam is working with Mary Opperman to send an email asking supervisors to be flexible to allow their staff to attend, especially since it's, the students are there and it's sort of an odd, it's not the traditional lunch hour. So we're hoping that will help. We're also having a small satellite event in Geneva where the staff are going to gather to watch the live stream and, I don't know, have popcorn. I'm not really sure, but just as a way to get them involved. So we're sort of working on all angles here. That's sort of...
Laura has a question?
Oh, yes.
Have you reached out to the Cornell Tech campus?
We haven't, only because technically the Cornell Tech staff are not among our constituents, which is a little odd sounding, but yeah. But I mean, we could still advertise it.
How are they not our constituents? Because they're Cornell employees.
Right. Yeah, we try. I could provide more detail. I'm sure Gina could as well. But there have been attempts made to add a seat for representation for the tech campus, but generally speaking, we represent employees on Ithaca and Geneva campuses.
Okay. So.
But there's no reason why we couldn't, if we have contacts there, forward that information. I can actually reach out to the comms director there, and all the live stream is available. It's not like restricted or anything. So happy to have them join us.
Thank you.
Anything else on that?
No.
Okay. The other big thing I just want to mention, because it sort of relates to the president's address, we will be, as you know, we have our voting is open for the EA Appreciation Award. Today's the last day to do it. We've received 22 votes so far, so there's a handful that haven't voted yet, and that will be open through today. So we're changing the format a little bit this year. We're going to be recognizing all of the nominees at the president's address and announcing the winner at the president's address, so it'll be more of a surprise. And so in support of that, we're going to be, Adam and I have written a letter to notify the nominees that they have been nominated for the award and invite them to attend. We'll have some reserved seating for the nominees from each group. And so it'll be similar, but with a twist. And let's see, what else? Oh, the important thing is I'm going to be reaching out to all of the members who nominated a group. We need to identify points of contact for those letters to go out for the notifications, and then our hope is that we can have you guys co-sign them and help us deliver that notification. So it's sort of, you know, it's good news, so who wouldn't want it, right? Anyway, okay, so that's pretty much, I'm going to call that a day on my update. I'm sorry if I took too long.
Thank you, Carrie. Next, Education Committee.
Hi. So we met last week, and we discussed a bunch of different things. One thing Craig brought up was there's a military walk. We're talking about discussing Cornell history and what goes on with the, you know, and all the rich history and getting a little bit down about in that. And Craig brought up that the a military history walking tour, which is actually going to happen Sunday, September 29th from 11 to 12, starting at Barton Hall. And he sent me the information, but of all, I didn't even know there were military, you know, there were like, you know, statues and just different honors throughout the campus. So that was interesting. So if anyone wants that more information, I can certainly send it to them. Then we discussed the class program and the different challenges that are happening with them. So I'm going to meet with the coordinator for class in early October to discuss what the challenges are, to get this group more information. How is it impacted? How many people are impacted by their challenges? Do they need support? And then, you know, we'll discuss it further. We discussed benefits for education, benefits for some education. We plan to meet with other people too. So we have a lot of things going on. So just saying.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions?
Anything I missed?
Thank you. Welfare committee.
That's me. We have our first meeting Monday. Michelle Arterby is planning to attend to give us a little bit of update on what we closed out the term with last year, talking about work-life balance, transportation opportunities, sustainability, workplace. Our second meeting is then scheduled in October. Bridget Brady will be there giving us an update on the transportation issues. Thank you. Any questions?
All right. Moving on to Benefits and Policy Committee.
We met once. We have set monthly meetings for Tuesday. We had pretty good attendance with a couple of new people and some carrying over from last year. So what we did was a recap of last year's action items. We talked about the vacation policy survey that Tarek had done and whether or not to pursue moving forward with a resolution for that. And after discussion, decided that we'll table it right now. We talked about the salary red line. Further information, which I am in the process of doing. I think the issue is still pretty much on the front burner because we were notified by Josh that the whole CIC unit apparently redlined their employees this last tip period. So, I mean, I think it's an important issue to continue to query, address, try and find some kind of options for moving forward.
I'm sorry, Anne. What term did you just use? Redlined?
Yeah, I don't think that's the term that. We've been talking about this, Carrie. It's Cornell for employees who've been in a particular pay band for long enough to reach the 120 or usually thereabouts. It's based on each each unit has the option whether or not to implement this. If you reach a certain level of your salary, band level, units have the option of giving you a bonus instead of a SIP increase, which, as everyone knows, affects your cumulative compounded salary up increase, and it also affects your retirement.
Right. Okay.
So we're trying to figure out how and why this happens and where it happens, because it's optional. And I was informed that CIT apparently used this. It's a soft policy. There's no policy to be found, but it is done. And I'm trying to get more information, but this is the information I've been trying to get since March unsuccessfully. So, we're going to try and pursue, other ways of getting the information so that you can figure out how and why these things apply and where.
Thanks, Anne. And
we're going to continue with that. I've had one inquiry from for new business after, what we'd like to continue to address this year is an ILR inquiry about just some clarity on how salary bands are arrived at and who arrives at them and how they are, the market values established and all this kind of stuff. So what we may want to do is talk to Kim Babuka, who is Director of Compensation, to give us some kind of background on how that's done. I don't know how it's done. And then we've also, revisited some issues that have been raised by a member of the committee who's not on the EA about the endowed formulary for prescription drugs not being available to staff members within enough of a time frame for them to make informed decisions on their benefits choices. So, these are issues that kind of getting into the weeds, getting into the, the details, trying to figure out exactly how and what information is provided when. And so that's what we're going to follow up on. And then the other thing that I, introduced last year was this goal of mine to, and I think everybody has, I haven't heard any dissenting opinions, people have agreed that it would be good to have someone on the EA or affinity position on the EA for staff members who've been here for longer than 10 or 15 years so that they have a voice distinct from the voice. There is already an affinity EA position for staff members who are here for 5 years and less. So because I think their issues and concerns would be different, and so it'd be good to have those represented. And so I tried to figure out how to go about the process of getting this done, and I've sent an email to Gina to ask what the initial steps are, but I have not yet heard back. So that's my guess.
I have a question. Why was the resolution that Tara, or the concept that Tara had worked on, tabled?
Okay. So I'll tell you what. Apparently, and Tara, is he not here? He's still on the EA, but I haven't actually connected with Tarek this year, so this is kind of my take on what happened. The president or the HR office, once we submitted, as you know, the results came in that we would choose option three or the third choice or whatever. The HR office submitted a note to Tarek saying that this is not within their timeline to consider, and it's not something that they're interested in addressing at this point. So there's one thing. Which was kind of odd after all of this. We all felt that on the committee that we had some buy-in from HR and that they'd be willing to take this up. But it's not the case right now. Also, there is definite sense, having on the BPC, that those members of the BPC don't think of this as an urgent issue that should be addressed right now, that there are other more pressing concerns than providing additional vacation for in this way. So, what we discussed was the process, the outcomes of the process, HR's response, and whether or not we should continue to address it. And as a committee, the general consensus was that it's not right now a pressing issue. So we're not going to pursue. The next step would be a resolution. So I'd be happy to hear from anybody if you feel like we should pursue this. So we decided to table it at this time. And like I say, I have not heard directly from the start. So
question. This is to provide more vacation to people who are new? I don't understand.
Yeah, that. No, so it would require an update. Tarek, who was the chair of the Benefits and Policy Committee last year, conducted a survey for Cornell's policy for vacation is that you accumulate a certain number of days over 14 years. It takes you 14 years to get to the maximum vacation allowance. And so he had communicated with HR about a process for either giving all of that vacation allowance immediately upon employment or waiting 5 years, 10 years, right? So those are the choices. And he based this on surveys and data that he gathered from comparable Ivy and local institutions that provide more vacation. He created a whole survey. The survey was completed by all the EA members last year. Everybody submitted a vote of the vote. And this is the vote choice that became apparent was that we were interested or employees were interested in not providing immediate access or 5 years, so they were willing to give the new employees 10 years, an accelerated 10-year rate rather than the 14-year rate. But as I said, HR was not interested in putting that on the table currently anyway.
So in other words, a new employee after 10 years take a month off.
Yes, or whatever the time is that, I mean, I've been here for 30 years and I guess.
It's the rate of accrual.
It's the rate of accrual.
So I think, is it five? When does the first jump happen now, currently?
It happens at 10.
So if you have 1 year,
15 days.
Up until 15 years.
Right, but I understand now that the point of it is so that people coming and taking a job can say, oh, well, in 5 years, I could take a long trip to.
Yes. Or immediately. One of the choices was immediate. Yeah.
And then the idea of accruing it faster is to sort of reward employees, I guess, for like after like 2 years of employment, you get an extra day. Instead of waiting 10 years before you get an extra day. If that makes sense.
I don't know that it was more about rewarding employees. Sorry. It was about making sure that we were on par with our other peer
institutions.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, like
all of the data and all of the information in the whole report that Tarek did is on the EA server in the box.
Okay. Great. Any other updates?
So at least about that last point about the work that Tarek did, the last assembly thought that was really good work. And one of the things that I would ask everybody to think about is that all the committees that are a part of the EA are subject to what the EA wants to do. So even if the committee said, we don't really think we want to do that right now, if the EA by our rules said that seems like something we would like to at least keep going until we get totally dead end, then it would be something where we could take a vote and see if we want to proceed. The fact that HR was, you know, by the end of the last year, HR was at least posturing, you know, this is a little bit of the telephone game that you pick one and we'll give you whatever you want. And now for some reason they went entirely cold on this decision. And that's going to affect how we do whatever else that we're going to do for the employee assembly and how we still get things done. So I would suggest that we think about what does that really mean? Try to find out maybe what happened with HR where they decided, hey, this is more than we can chew. And even if that is true, get them to commit to some kind of a timetable. And Anne was totally perfectly correct that we could make a resolution and say, hey, this is something that we want to see happen the EA, but ideally we can get them to make changes about things. So, you know, with Kate a little bit, I was surprised that it was something that seemed like we got there, and then at the finish line we are and mostly it was about trying to get people that are new to Cornell, you know, a better work-life balance, to give them some additional time up front to either, you know, come to things like DEA, got a little bit of extra. But it became a very real thing where when the employees around campus got asked, like, is this a thing, it was not something that anybody felt was like something that was really causing them any trouble, as well as the fact that, surprisingly, and something that the EA should think about as we go on this year, the way seniority is recognized at Cornell, this was identified as one of the very few areas that someone could say, hey, I've been here a long time, and they, you know, after being here 15 years, I get a little bit more extra vacation than everybody else, which to me was like a very weird thing to hear. Like, that's the only way that you feel appreciated as a long-standing member at Cornell.
And to pick up on that, is this is the origin of the sense that we should add an affinity seat for people who've been here for that long, because there's clearly a sense of disgruntlement and an unwillingness to, it's a feeling of unfairness in allowing people who are newer to get their vacation. I think because maybe there just isn't enough of a recognition of, you know, if this is the way we're recognizing people, then we can do better.
I would make a suggestion that sometime in the not so distant future, we devote a meeting to go and jack over the research, I mean, that was done, because it is fairly complex. So for the new people, maybe it's a refresher. So we could look into it a little deeper. Because that was a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of
feedback.
All right.
So can I just ask, is this, as you know, as the BPC, we talked about it and decided that we were not going to pursue this for all the reasons that I mentioned, but am I hearing that this is something that people would like us to, I don't know, would like us to continue to pursue, at the very least to find out what HR, you know, what that response meant or didn't mean. And in Tarek's absence, it's kind of hard for me to pick up on this because this was his baby, but I'm willing to try.
I would be interested in it. I don't feel, I'm sorry, that it takes away from anyone who's been here a long time.
I'm just saying it doesn't take anything away from people, and it doesn't give anything the option of the selected immediately,
and it was about making us a more competitive employer for retention. But then also we had gone through a process, we had buy-in, so I would be really interested in having HR come back and explain how they use the process and where we lost their support. Yes.
I'd just like to add, as on the committee, being a member of the committee, that part of the reason I believe that we decided to table this right now is that we didn't really feel like there was a lot of information from employees of Cornell. The few sample questionnaires that were taken were minimal, and there was some trouble that people got into for giving out these surveys. So we're kind of confused as to what the next step was, because are we really pursuing something that's important to the employees of the university?
I think that's a good point. I'm hoping maybe as we collect more information from these polls, we can get a sense, like, if 470 people answered, but, you know, vacation days are like right for 20 people and everybody else is concerned with other areas, and to a larger degree, I think that's also with considering where our time and energy is going and what our priorities are, I think it's important to reflect what this really broad group of individuals, which is the Cornell community, what their priorities want to be. So I think looking at data is important. Does anybody have any other input on this?
Mm-hmm. Yes, if I could, I mean, I don't know if it's feasible, but I'd like to give HR a name, and I'd like to get a written correspondence from that name explaining the reason.
That would be if we wrote a resolution, they would have to respond to that. Mm-hmm. So that would be the next step.
There was a one-paragraph response to Tarek that he forwarded to me from Lauren Jacoby that said, this is not currently in our timeline, and that was the only correspondence that I've seen in response to this entire effort.
So that would be Lori Johnson in Workforce
retention, why we stay, why we came. And I know HR is doing work now to try to figure out what they want to do in order to make Cornell a more attractive workplace. So it might be that they're just not, that they haven't identified this in their research as something that
I don't remember. We went to the focus group that Adam had invited EA members to participate in, and they basically just asked us, what do you love about Cornell? Why do you love working here? What keeps you working here rather than going somewhere else? And what don't you necessarily like, or why would you decide to go somewhere else? And not once anything about vacation came up. It wasn't any of our concerns. It wasn't something that we thought about or discussed. So I think it's just not, I mean, personally, I think it's not necessarily a huge priority for us.
Marcy?
There. Oh, sorry. I participated in a focus group too, and the one thing I would say is it never seemed like benefits and pay were on the table. I don't think those are the metrics they were asking them. It's hard to imagine that somebody coming into Cornell asked if they'd like another vacation, they would say no. I think often when we participate in focus groups, that isn't something that's talked about.
Brian, you had a question, and then Sarah.
Could we repeat the last comment for the online folks? We didn't hear that so well.
Okay, I'm not sure where the microphone is.
So this is Mary. I said that at the focus group, it seems like salary and benefits are on the table for discussion. And I think, you know, if we were asked, would you like more vacation, most employees, particularly new ones, would say yes, but it doesn't seem like when we participate in these focus groups, they focus on education and housing availability and things like that. Salary and benefits just don't really come up that much.
Thank you. Sorry.
Right?
I just wonder when the next meeting is, the date.
Yeah, we meet on the second Tuesday of every month in 381I at 10 a.m. Let me know. I'm in. If you want to attend, I mean, they're always, we Zoom them, but I'd be happy to.
What number was that?
Include 381.
381.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Sarah, I think we should end with you and then move on to the other committee reports and then open discussion. Sarah?
Mine is just, I'd ask folks to speak up. Some of the Zoom attendees are having a hard time here. I also have a mic if anybody would like that.
Okay, all right, and if you don't mind, I'd like to move on to the executive committee and the election committee. Do you have anything else to add?
No, one thing. It seems like this is of interest to many people, so perhaps we need to have a group of whoever's interested come to the next meeting or send me an email and I'll set up a meeting so we can follow up on this, because I agree. A lot of effort was put into it, and I think that we should finish it up in a way that makes everybody comfortable.
Okay. The next committee would be the executive committee, so I'm on that. I know Adam has sent out an email with a lot of great updates, so I wanted to provide an update from that email. CJC, which is the Codes and Judicial Committee, has asked solicited some volunteers from the EA. They don't necessarily need to be members, but provided from the EA. So Laura and Jen have volunteered. Thank you very much for being part of this. The CJC does a lot in terms of interpreting and recommending provisions of the campus code, and they make recommendations to the university assembly to appoint candidates to the board of the university hearing and review board, which is pretty big unit that hears, you know, student and staff are proceeding. So it's important work, and I'm really glad that, you know, we have members a part of that committee. Adam has also in his email indicated that we are seeking volunteers to advocate for and be, you know, soliciting audience members for the lunchtime sustainability talk. So last year, a sustainability of literature resolution was passed, and we partnered with Dr. Hoffman, who is the executive director for the Cornell Institute for Climate Smart Solutions, to promote, you know, literature around sustainability. So
we're trying to find some volunteers to help out with that. So if you want to volunteer for the sustainability trunk, email Adam and he'll get you involved in that group. And that's kind of it for now. We're working a lot with the president's office on the upcoming president's address to staff and kind of trying to make sure that this year individuals have the necessary tools and you're, you know, coordinating with individuals around campus to have these meetings be productive and kind of, you know, asking for feedback in regards to who we should have at these meetings, but also being mindful that these conversations are very important. Having everybody engaged and be a part of the things that we're talking about, I think, is really important. And that's some of the feedback that I've gotten from last year to have more open conversations. It sounds like, you know, we're doing that this year. We're having these conversations and having people be involved. So that is the executive committee update. Are there any questions or concerns about that? Okay, great. No questions on that. I'll move on to the elections committee.
Okay. So we met for the first time last week and decided as a group that we would like to recruit the remaining open seats, so we'll be working on that. We do, Adam let us know that we need to do a 2-week solicitation period, and we're thinking about starting that with the president's address. Carrie sent us some opportunities around the president's address that we're discussing right now. For the rest of you, we decided to work by email for this semester, and then we'll have regular meetings in the spring when we have to focus on the May elections. So those, so as of now, there won't be any meetings, but there will be that you can join in the spring if you're interested or able to.
Any questions for elections please? That I wanted to move on to new business. As I mentioned, a lot of the feedback from last year was to provide more, you know, space for our conversation. I think there are things that happen across campus all the time that we don't necessarily have the time to discuss. Sorry, Sarah.
Just speak up, really speak up.
Okay. Last year, a lot of the feedback was that there wasn't enough time to have conversations and dialogue around the issues surrounding the Cornell community. So I think when issues happen, because we really only meet twice a month, there are very few pockets of time to discuss issues that impact the Cornell community. So I have opened up this last segment of the meeting to talk about new business. And one of the items I wanted to talk about was Gregory Ells, who used to be the who used to work at Cornell, and he has passed. He's somebody who worked a lot with students around mental health, and he tried to mitigate student suicide around campus. So he has passed, and I think it is a great loss for the UPenn community for his work at the time, and also Cornell, because he was here as a staff member for 15 years, and I think that his loss is of great impact to the Cornell community. And I think as we talk about issues that do impact the Cornell community, mental health and the stigma around, you know, around mental health, I think is something that is important. We've seen in surveys, we've seen in conversations that mental health is an issue that concerns the staff. And I think as, you know, we are a community of EA members, but we're also a part of the broader Cornell community. And when something like this happens and impacts our community, I think it's worth discussing. What are the steps forward? What are some things that we want to explore? What are some of the conversations that we should be having as it pertains to staff mental health? So I wanted to open up the floor for conversation. I wanted to kind of provide some time to talk about this because from what I've seen, what I've read in the news, both in the Cornell Sun and then in national news outlets, you know, it seemed like Gregory Ells was a great member of the community. And provided a lot to the population as well as the staff population. So I wanted to kind of talk about that a little bit and see what your thoughts were. So I'm opening up the floor for that discussion. Mark?
I knew him pretty well. Worked with him on and off for most of the time that he's here. I know his family is still here. I know that Cornell Health staff are having a number of different meetings around dealing with the situation. It's particularly difficult because he was an expert in resilience and suicide, and he committed suicide. So so that's pretty difficult for a lot of the people who worked with him and with him. CAPS is great about getting out in the community. I mean, they're doing a lot of really good work to get out. I don't know how many of you know that they have satellite stations around campus where you can talk to accounts who are not necessarily there. And although they don't work with staff, they refer you to the staff assistance program. So they'll make a handshake, they'll connect you in person if you're really in crisis.
Okay. Yeah, I would say that since being here at Cornell, there's like an awareness for student health and well-being, and we're kind of all on the alert for seeing a student that might be in distress, and we may have opportunities to kind of create more awareness about staff and somebody. I mean, I can say I have 30 employees, and I could go each one of them and give you a litany of things that they confront that are difficult. So Hey and I were talking, and it's like, what could we do? Is there something we could suggest or do? Like you could have a little form, but more than likely a person in distress won't even attend, So it's not something that's talked about. Probably 45,000 people in the United States commit suicide each year. And when you see it on the news, that's like 900 people a week. So it's a really a big issue, a mental health issue, and so I think that's why we want to talk about it. Is there, something that we can do being proactive to, kind of help address that issue?
So last term we did in fact meet with, I believe you were there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We did in fact meet with the Gabriel from the Family Assessment Program. And we advanced a pretty decent conversation that I think we could revisit. I think I bring to you, this isn't the first staff-related mental health-generated crisis that I'm aware of on this campus last term. So I think there's an opportunity to continue that conversation with Gabrielle. And while he was very confident in positioning Cornell among leaders in the benefits and services we provide the staff, I think we could still engage with them.
Well, and just to add to that, I think the inquiry came from Jeremy, who's our trustee representative, and the question is, had been, there is so much publicity around the CAPS and what was the parity for faculty for staff. And that's where we were able to garner, and it's like, okay, we do have a lot of services that are available, and just trying to continue to re-examine that. Maybe he was a little hesitant, I guess, at least that's my recollection, about trying to promote too much because they don't really have a lot of staff to be able to meet the needs. And so that's the difficulty.
But we're staffed at a level that's superior to many. I wouldn't say the only, the best, but he was, we have a lot of stuff.
So they will come out and do talks to different groups, and to even large groups, Gabriel staff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true, they don't have many therapists there,
right?
But they do connect people who come in that they can't help with people in the community that take Cornell insurance, whatever plan you have. So they have lists of people who will honor the Cornell.
Right, and that balance between the limits of the services they can offer and then long-term. And I think that's part of the question is the Ithaca community maybe not having adequate resources and that type of referral relationship that Gabriel's office has is a little bit stronger than, say, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
services and I found them totally inadequate. I mean, I was referred to one person who was willing to talk to me for, you know, I did not get a lot out of it, and there was, I don't know. I mean, it was not what I would have thought would have been provided at a university of so many employees. I just think, you know, either the communication was lousy or there was something that was a disconnect, but it wasn't a situation where I felt like my needs were being addressed.
Please go ahead.
And once was around divorce, and I found it very helpful at that time. And then another was more about workplace issues, and then it was helping them help me decide whether it was an kind of issue or an HR issue, and how confidential I should need to be. They couldn't really offer me much there, so I think it depends a lot on the nature of the crisis because they are pointless.
Yeah, and so maybe there's room there for some sort of, you know, development of alternatives that might better serve the population. And I agree that there's such a focus on student mental health, and I totally get that, you know, but I'm not quite sure why there are two tiers. People.
Right. I wanted to share that I think each one of us as leaders on campus also have a responsibility and the ability to have a really positive impact on our colleagues and being that front line, if you will, of knowing how things are going with others around us, being genuinely concerned about what's going on in their lives and recognizing that although we all hold titles, we are, as Anne said, you know, we're people first. And so I think that as we step out, you know, and go out in our workspaces and so forth, being genuinely compassionate and concern for our fellow colleagues is a great starting point. And, you know, I don't think any of us really have the answers or the expertise of psychiatrist or therapist, but we can certainly be an active ear and listen and empathize with others.
I'd like to segue on that because I was saying the same thing, but in a more formal way, that if a body of people, one of the committees or whatever, follow up with Gabriel, get some insight, but what can individuals do? Like you said, it's like supervisors of people, have they received any training on observing behaviors of employees that might be stressed in intervention? Or, I could think of 10 different things that could be suggested to be done. You know, like, if you come within 5 feet of another person, smile and say hello to them. You know, just so many different things, like you said, at the human level of interaction that we can do. But I think it's worth, and I think that's why Hey brought it up, to say, you know, is this something we should, you know, have to examine with, who mentioned Gabriel?
I was present at the meeting as well.
So anyway, I like that because we all impact. I mean, I'm a believer as a supervisor, I can make employees sick. I can drive them to drink. I can, you know, just in the manner that I treat them, on or the opposite effect on them. So we should all be aware of that.
Yeah, I just want to add that, you know, I think mental illness is not something that's brought on by anybody else. It can be exacerbated. So if you have a mental illness, you have a mental illness. And I don't know that a smile or anything is going to change anything. I mean, it's a part of your makeup. And so while that sort of outreach and empathy and, you know, encouragement and friendliness is incredibly valuable, it's not the answer. There are times where you need a clinician. There are times when you need a physician, when you need medication. And so, you know, I think that's where the disconnect comes in, is the sense that you can't
can't make people well by providing these sort of like, you know, human people interaction kinds of things because it's an illness. And so I think that's a great start, but I don't think you can stop there. I think that more needs to be done on the granular level for providing people with the services that they need.
Okay, so just Kate and then on.
I just wanted to quickly follow up on Tony's and then come back to Chris. Tony, I was looking because I remembered going to a workshop fairly recently. So I looked, it was March 2018. Somebody did a workshop on unpacking mental health in the workplace. And my notes, there was a lot of information for supervisors. That might be something, I don't know who did the workshop, but it was very helpful to me. But Chris said more eloquently than what I was going to say, but I do think I agree with what you said too, Anne. But I think we can just all be a caring community, just recognizing that something might be happening and someone acts differently. I had a coworker reach out to me this summer, specifically because I wasn't talking as much with her as I used to. So I think it's helpful. Even if it doesn't solve things, it's helpful to know that someone notices.
Yeah, it's important, but it's often not easy.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. I wanted to speak to a couple of different things that I do think I understand the rationale for having a set of benefits and policies and services for faculty and staff on campus versus students, because the responsibility level for university is quite different. We're operating in local, for instance, for kids who are here as students versus employees. I also want to say that my family has been a heavy user of our health insurance policy that, or health insurance benefits that provide the most generous coverage for mental health care I have ever had. It is endowed. But I know people on the state side who also, I mean, I go once every week or two to a therapist, it's covered at 80%. It's not capped ever. My kids go to their therapist, and it's covered at 80%. There has never been, I mean, I have to pay and file. There's a little bit of paperwork involved. I would be shocked if there was not parity on the state side with availability to mental health care.
They're a provider, you know, in
network.
In network.
Yeah, no, mine are not in network, so it's 80-20.
Yeah.
But I've had health insurance my entire life, and this is the best coverage I've ever had for myself and my family. So I am grateful for that, and I do think that it's great that there is an office at Cornell that go to and get an appointment within a week or two with someone who is a licensed mental health professional, a psychotherapist, usually a patient of an SW, a licensed therapist, who can, and not every therapist works for every person. That doesn't always be the case. And one visit often doesn't do that much. But it does give people the opportunity to go and talk to somebody and have someone to help you find.
For a number of us that had worked with Breakfast with Greg on an ongoing basis, I just want to talk about the impact of that. It's been significant. His loss, especially given the sort of the formidable presence he was with our student type prevention on campus, it's just significant. It definitely has impacted people beyond CAPS and Cornell Health to many areas outside of student services, actually. So I think it's one of those things that is an important discussion for us to continue to have. I would like us to continue to think about that, and it's not a better, worse, what have you, treating people nicely versus services that are needed. I think those are all are a valid component of a discussion. The one thing I want to say is that we're taking off our 3-year disability strategic plan
that has a significant component of mental health services and mental health needs presence and sort of addressing the stigma on campus. Obviously, we can't do anything about medical services. That's why you're doing those things. Obviously, maybe you're busy to take up, you know, to be able to do that. But I can tell you when we pitched out this three-year comprehensive strategic plan, and you all have probably seen the posters on campus that show people and you know, non-obvious and obvious disabilities. We got some pushback, and it's like, well, why are you, as a disability team, dealing with issues of mental health? Isn't that torn out health? I didn't really actually say that. I'm like, all right, disability. It's a component of it. That's the whole reason why we have to choose and really work towards program services activities outside of a student presence. Staff, faculty, you know, visitors to the university, and all aspects of that continuum. And I think we all have to continue to do that. And we have a pretty comprehensive plan to sort of take us in that direction. But I think it takes all of us understanding it and looking at that presence, that it's an important aspect of it. But I think we all need to be able to, there's a seat at the table from many perspectives. I just would like to continue to remind something that the EA can help.
Thank you. I know that there's been some commentary online, so I think that individuals that are on Zoom would also like to contribute to the conversation. I don't have access to the historic chat that has been happening. If anybody that is on Zoom wants to kind of provide some feedback on what's been commented on via the chat, feel free to do so. I feel like from all of these conversations, this is a topic that, you know, has impacted people, is a personal issue. But I think there are so many ways to go about this, whether that's looking at what resources are available, what the capacity is, what the impact is. I think it's also important to say, I think somebody also mentioned it, that, that, you know, we should, or I would like to think that I would like to feel that I am here for, you know, anybody who does want to chat, that we are within ourselves a community of individuals supporting each other and striving to improve the EA community, but also Cornell as a community broadly. That's kind of why we're here, to kind of look at issues, address them, try to find solutions. So I just want to offer, you know, and volunteer, you know, and say, you know, I am here for staff members. And I think that this issue of mental health is complicated one, and is a difficult one, but I really appreciate all the conversations around it and talking about what resources are available, what everybody's experience has been with it. I think this is a conversation that doesn't end here, that will just continue, and hopefully it'll be worked through in community and then also as us as a larger body.
This is Terry. I had a quick comment, if we have time. Just looking at it, I guess, from a different stepping back, I guess, from mental illness, but thinking more broadly just about mental health and well-being, we see a recurring theme when we collect feedback from staff. We hear staff talking about sources of stress. So, I mean, there's the resources and the support, but thinking about sources of stress, we hear staff talk about over and over, having to do more with less, and that being a source of stress, the hiring practices, attrition, not filling positions, you know, stress from being a temp worker, we hear a lot of that. And so I don't know if I realize it's sort of tangential, but that's where my mind goes, thinking about how can we work with the administration to focus on some of these issues. It doesn't feel good to think that we have staff colleagues that are just, you know, up to here, you know, fed up, stressed out, overworked. And so anything that we could do, I would love to be a part of that. I wanted to also mention Rigel had asked a couple questions. What benefits are there to staff other than FSAP for mental health assistance? Can we communicate these benefits in a newsletter? If anyone wants to take point on that and help the comms committee, I would be happy to focus, do some sort of feature on that in the future, in the next newsletter or whenever it makes sense. So.
Laura just volunteered to help put together some resources. I think that would be great.
Thanks, Laura.
Yeah.
Herb? I'd like to make a point. We're talking a lot about mental illness, but there's also like emotional difficulties at work. And I had a coworker who was mistreated by a supervisor. And, he did get some very good help through Cornell. But then the supervisor, personnel, you know, the departmental HR department is giving the supervisor feedback about how often this person is going, and it was used against it. So, you know, I think that it's not all just mental illness, and it's not all just workers who have supervisors are having trouble with one thing or another. I mean, it's personal issues, but there's a lot of work issues, and there has to be, I think, avenues to get counseling or to get some support.
Yeah, I just want to follow up with Ann's earlier comments. I absolutely agree. When you're talking about mental health, and especially chronic, and I guess what I'm talking about is more like will be episodic. It's like I just lost my rent money at the track. My significant other broke up. And it was a saying I share with Hey, that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. So I think sometimes people, they don't have severe mental health necessarily, but they're in a bad mental state. And I think, again, if by, you know, niceties, those types of things, I wasn't suggesting if I, you know, saying minimizing it. I believe some people need to do whatever you need to do, but I think that we can go a long way just in our daily interactions.
100% agree with you.
Yeah,
I wanted to interject with something from online. So Jeremy Kruger, who is, I think, a rep on the Board of Trustees, so he's indicated one difference in approach is that employees are unlikely to be candid about issues with mental health for fear of negatively impacting their career. One avenue to address this is to consider how Cornell might provide some kind of anonymous means for staff to identify local resources for mental health. I talked this over in passing with a few folks from Cornell Health, and they seem to be keen on this idea, though it would require some real thought as to how to implement something like this. Does anybody have any thoughts on, you know, being able to identify local resources for mental health, like, and what that would look like?
Well, a couple things. The first thing is I'd like to thank everybody for the card.
I'm well. I'm doing better. It was excruciating, but I'm better now. On a mental health thing, I think that I've dealt with some of these issues before because I was a counselor in the past. And so I will tell you this, that what Craig and what Tony were advocating is a good way, but I also have to act as a referral agency. And if you don't know anybody, find somebody that does. Gabriel's a good contact. There's people out there that can, the biggest solution to the problem is referral. The people that know that there's something going on, being quiet is the worst thing you can do. You got to be a referral. I believe they even showed that in some of the videos, the training, respect and stuff. That there's a problem. You see something, say something. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. If you see something that doesn't look right, acknowledge it. And if you don't want to deal with it, find somebody that can deal with it. But always do something. Because the worst thing to do is do nothing. And I think that us an agency of Cornell, anybody is an agency of Cornell, employee of Cornell, that's our obligation. When you see something, you gotta not only say something, but if you can't find a solution, keep reaching out, act as a referral agency. There's many organizations within the Cornell community, not just Cornell, that can help. And a lot of them are not for profit. So there are advocacy centers, there's the suicide crisis centers, advocate, look for volunteers, there's lots of ways that people can help. So I just want to add.
So just wanted to, you know, acknowledge what everybody said. And then I think what Andrea and Jeremy sort of like both put their finger on the main problem is the stigma.
people of mental illness, and the fact that staff are not outing themselves or identifying themselves as having a mental illness for fear of, you know, losing their jobs, and the fact that supervisors are, you know, able to, I don't know, manipulate based on, you know, on the position that they're in. And so that puts people in fear of retaliation. So I think the biggest way to address this is just awareness. Awareness that of, you know, I don't know, mental health awareness, that the trying to educate people about the weight of the stigma.
Any other comments, feedback? I guess you that is a great point, that kind of removes any of the negative stigma around mental health is crucial to being able to address some of these issues. Some people might not feel comfortable talking about that. And so how do you confront issues? You can't even feel comfortable talking about it. We're trying to find resources for it. On that note, if there are no other comments, no other, you know, items to discuss, it's 1:27, I would feel comfortable.
One point in new business that I wanted to ask with regard to our annual budget, because of the fact that we are not providing a larger element of refreshments at the president's address to staff, would it be possible to reallocate those funds towards the Cornell Care program?
So that is something that at the executive committee we've received some communication about, and we're still getting details around that. So once we have more firm answer for you, we will let you know. But that is a really great point and very, you know, very pertinent to some of the conversations going around.
Hey, Craig. This is Craig. Marcy can attest to the fact that the snacks aren't so much cheaper than the box lunches, so we're still going to be spending money, probably, just FYI.
The box lunches last year were $4.75 each box lunch. That was a special price. It's now gone up. That same box lunch is $11. So an apple, a cookie, and a bottle of water is costing the same as a box lunch did last year. So I'm not seeing it. And we could have no snacks.
Yeah, we're still working on it.
Yeah.
Any other items for new business?
I have a follow-up to the budget. Did we review the budget for the year? Did I miss that meeting? Because I feel like we didn't go over the budget for this year. And if what the committees have, any funding or anything like that.
We did initially go over the established budget, but we haven't received any updates as to what's been spent year to date. So still working with Gina on getting that.
Is the budget, but I looked in the box, the budget is not posted in the box. Can we add it? Because I didn't see that. I don't know if I missed the meeting or
it's going in one of the minutes.
Yeah. I remember voting.
But it sounds like you don't have access to it, so let's try to make sure that's transparent and that's available to everybody to review. Again, so it is now 1:29. If there's no other business to discuss, I would like to make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, great. Any dissent? This meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for your
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.